podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Thanks for choosing this free Anfield Index podcast. If you'd prefer to listen to this or any of our other shows without adverts, then now's the time to check out Anfield Index Pro. With AI Pro, you can supercharge your entire listening experience. You'll not only get all of our podcasts without the ads, but you'll have them far faster with our quick publish feature available exclusively for subscribers. AI Pro also puts you in the heart of our sound studio, with an option to listen to many of our shows live and interact with the podcasters in real time as the shows are recording. Upgrading couldn't be easier. AI Pro is available on all popular podcast platforms, and we have our own apps for Apple and Android. Just head on over to AnfieldIndexPro.com and get started today.
Hello and welcome to the video podcast that is Malby on the Spot. I'm Trev Denny, and I'm joined by Liverpool and Denmark legend Jan Malby as we look back over the week that was for Liverpool and the week to come. And it's not the same as it usually has been in the past because, well, there's some bad news and it's ongoing and it seems to be a difficult spell for the Reds. So let's find out what the man himself thinks of it. Good evening, Jan.
Good evening, Trevor. I have to be honest, it's a pretty awful time.
It really is. And the upshot of the most of the conversations I've had, Jan, over the last while with people who are as obsessed as I am and as interested as I am in all the affairs to do with the club, the upshot of most of the chats are people seem to be split into two camps. And again, I'm interested in your personal experience with your conversations. One camp is the lads are tired, trust in Klopp, it'll come right. The other crowd on the far extreme are, there's something very wrong, it's all gone to hell, season's over. Now, of course, the truth, I think, is somewhere in between. I think you'll probably be in the same boat as me. But I'm wondering which of the two extremes you're leaning towards, because I think both are understandable positions. These are people whose opinions on football I respect, and they're backing it up with just gut feeling rather than evidence, because none of us have much evidence apart from the results. So at this stage, on the back of a couple of pretty awful results, how are you, which way are you leaning in terms of how you're viewing the season going ahead?
I generally don't know, Trevor. I think it's almost impossible. I mean, I think if we could sit here and come to a conclusion, then I'm sure that Klopp and his backroom staff would be able to do something very similar. I mean, you talk about, you know, people who are still suggesting we should trust Jurgen Klopp and the players, and then you got the players or the fans who are saying the season's over. I also would believe that you've got a fair amount of fans who are saying this team is over. You know, I've heard people saying that this group of players at the elite end of the Premier League and the Champions League are finished. So that suggests a decline, because otherwise a group of players like we've got wouldn't be finished unless there's a massive decline. The problem I have with the decline, Trevor, is that many at the same time. You know, we're talking elite footballers here. We start with Mo, Bobby, Jordan Henderson, Milner, Van Dijk, Robbo, Trent, Fabinho. They're the ones who are fair to say that they're underperforming, yeah? They can't all be in decline, can they? One or two of them maybe, but surely not seven, eight or nine of them. Having said all of that, I still don't know. I still don't quite know where we're at. I don't know what we can actually trust from this team anymore, because it's been a big thing to have Anna trust. It'll be okay. We've seen Klopp press conferences after games, and we've been very fortunate that we haven't had many bad spells, but we've had bad results and we've had draws and whatever, and he's come out and he's given us the impression that I've got this. I'll deal with this. Mm. I'll get in that dressing room. We'll have a chat. We'll be in a training ground tomorrow. When do you see us next? In 3 days. And it's been like that, hasn't it? I didn't get that impression after the Napoli game that he's telling us, don't worry, boys, I've got this. So I am really concerned, Trevor. I'm not a little bit concerned. I'm really concerned. We spoke about it the other week, and we didn't think that this was something that was massively going to change like that overnight. It was going to be a slow process, just getting back to. My biggest worry, Trevor, is that there is no reaction. There is no reaction between games. There is no reaction during matches. Take the Napoli game. We had enough spells in that game where you think, now there's going to be a reaction. Within a minute, they've hit the post. Within a couple of minutes, they've won it up from a penalty. Within 15 minutes, they've had another penalty. They've missed, and we think, we've got a lifeline. Let's go. Then you go 2-0 down, respond, no. Half-time, respond, no. Within 2 minutes of the second half, we're 4-0 down. I just generally don't know, Trevor. Let's try and get this picture back on. That's always a good idea. So.
You know.
I don't know, Trevor. I don't know. I mean, you spoke to a lot more people than I have because I've been doing a fair bit of traveling and all I've been picking up is the newspapers and whatever, isn't it? But I can understand if there's a meltdown. I can understand that people are saying. And, of course, you also got the people who are going, Klopp and 7 years. But is there such a thing? I know there's such a thing at Mainz and at Dortmund. Can that be third time unlucky? I don't know, Trevor. So we need to take it slow, one step at a time, and see what we can come up with.
I think that's really, really fair. And the thing you spoke about the lack of reaction is pretty stunning. And I think probably the one that really underlined it, you mentioned how we didn't react after the first goal, then there was the penalty let off. And then you, in passing, you said we didn't react at halftime. Not only did we not react at halftime, the first thing we do after halftime is concede. And it's, I found that really jarring. It was, you're used to maybe, I don't know how to say this without sounding condescending, but used to perhaps maybe teams from the lower leagues or whatever, maybe not being able to grasp basic lessons or not being able to do anything about it, even if they have. Say there's been a halftime team talk and it's like, okay, well, let's go out and win the second half, whatever the cliche is. And sometimes teams can do that, and sometimes teams are just overpowered by superior opposition. Last night, it very much felt like that. Every time Napoli attacked us, it felt as if we were fragile and frail and open to that attack. Now, within a few minutes of that goal going in, when Joel Matip became established in the team, I felt we did better. That said, they did take off their most potent attacking threats. They lost one of them to injury. They started removing lads left, right, and centre. So they really took their foot off the gas, I suppose is what I'm saying. So I don't get any consolation at all from the fact that we did better and we got the goal and we the second half is a one-all draw, effectively. That offers me little consolation, because I feel that if they weren't exactly toying with us, they were more than comfortable. And I come back full circle to a question about where are we on this scale, because I've never seen that with Klopp's Liverpool. I've seen it with Rodgers' Liverpool. I don't think we ever saw it with Benitez, because the way Benitez set up his teams, you were never going to cough up too many goals anyway. That was a priority with a Benitez team. But this just had that horrible sort of feel of something that's coming to its end. And it's really easy to do that. And like you said, all the pattern observers are going out there and saying, oh, this is how it went before, and this is how it went before. The amount of people, Jan, who are citing Dortmund and what happened at Dortmund. And listen, everybody knows me. I like a theory. I like a pattern. I like a bit of history. I like a bit of perhaps suggestion of a conspiracy here, there, or wherever. But I don't know if that's can that even be vaguely valid? Is it? What are we trying to say, that all of a sudden the wheels have come off in terms of the manager who committed himself to this club, the players who've signed new contracts? All of a sudden that there's a falling off. Oh, like you, I agree that it's highly unlikely that these people are coming to any sort of end of their cycle together, coincidentally at the same time. So there's something else. So this is where we come back to you. You're a man who's done it all, been through every kind of scenario you could be in a dressing room. So I put it to you, maybe where you were in dressing rooms in that kind of period where very early Souness days and mid Souness days, where perhaps was there ever that feeling of a falling away from what we had been, an inability to maintain the status that we had? Like, a bad season for Liverpool was always second, right? When you guys were playing in the 80s, so unsuccessful season, second again. Can you put your finger on what that might be? Have you experienced anything like that? That's the only year I can think of from your career that might be even vaguely comparable, but I don't think it was as dramatic or sudden.
So let's see. I'm quite interested in the Jurgen Klopp and the Dortmund thing in the 7 years, Trevor. And I just think there's a belting show to be had here where you try and compare. You know, you compare what happened at Dortmund in terms of the players, how long the players have been there, how many games they played, what age, and, you know, was he being loyal to certain players? Why did what happened at Dortmund happen? And I think that's a belting show, Trevor, where you maybe try and compare. You maybe get one or two German experts on to try and explain how they viewed it. And I think that's the only way you can have a real clear view on whether we're seeing the same things or it's just a coincidence. And I'm really intrigued about that. I mean, you know, unfortunately, I don't have the time or whatever to try and look into. But I think that's a real interesting show, that Trevor, isn't it? If you really want to sort of take one of the reasons away and go, listen, this is not happening because this is what happened. But in terms of, so for us, it finished in 1990. We won the title in 1990. And then, as everybody knows, it took 30 years. Well, I was there for another 6 years. So there was a falling off a cliff to a certain extent. But I actually think that there was probably more of a decline from a number of players, which is the one thing I want to try and get away from with these. It didn't happen from one day to another, because if you look through, Trevor, nice season 1991, we finished second, Arsenal won the league. But Arsenal lost one game. So it's not as if you go, how do we not win the league? We didn't win the league because Arsenal lost one game. So you can't actually go, you're not the team you used to be. But then things changed. And the thing with Kenny resigning and Graham Souness came in. And I think that was a bigger impact to start with than the decline of the players. But I think it was quite accepted that Graham would be given time. And he'd be given funds to do whatever he wanted to do. And I think when I talk about decline, there was a decline in some of the players, but it was also a decline in quality in that the players were coming in. So it's not what we're seeing now is that this group of players, all elite players, have been together for a number of years, haven't they? So I don't think they haven't been disturbed by a new manager. They have never been disturbed by a massive incoming of new players. So I think it is slightly different, although, you know, eventually, sort of we got to 93, 94, Trevor, it did, by then you felt it and you knew it. You know, you felt like, so this boy's no longer here, that you feel you can trust. And you look at the new players, you go, they might get there, but it's going to get time. This dressing room don't have that problem, do they? There's no need for this dressing room to doubt anyone. You know, because almost all of them have been there through it all, haven't they? So, Trevor, you're putting me on the spot here, and I'm finding it difficult to find some clear answers.
The reason I wanted to bring you back there was just to see if anything jumped to your mind. And I agree with you, because I was trying to think it through myself, and obviously I didn't have the first-hand experience of it. But the FA Cup in 92 for me sort of was a band-aid.
Very much. And I also think that's where it is in the history of the football club, isn't it? It's not a trophy spoken about, although it was the first one for Graham Souness as a manager, isn't it? But it's not ever put up there as anything other than, like you say, it's a bit of bandage, isn't it?
Yeah, and we look at the situation with this team now, and people will even, this is where how extreme it gets, Jan. People will even pontificate and look down their noses at us for having a conversation about the reality of what's occurring, because the other extreme from the moaners are the people who are just, you know, fingers in the air, la la la, it's all going to be fine. And that to me is equally idiotic as writing a whole team off, because it's not allowing any conversation for what we can see with our eyes. And when you have Jurgen Klopp, we spoke actually last week about how it felt as if the team had lost its identity a bit, because we were trying to compare and contrast some of the numbers that we had seen in terms of stats. And I think I'd mentioned to you that the Reds were running less than their opposition, which was a weird thing, that there was a less, from the eye test, there appeared to be less of a high press. That was the feel that we had. The side has sort of lost its identity a little bit. I mean, not sure what it does anymore, even though we've got this huge crossover of personnel, so that it shouldn't, but it has. Now, my theory is that crunch all comes to the midfield, Jan, and that has to be right. I'm going to come to you and talk to you about that and see if you concur. But just in terms of the bigger picture, when you have the manager coming out afterwards and saying, I think the exact quote was, well, we might have to reinvent ourselves a little bit. Well, that's the manager agreeing with what we're saying. He's saying, if we have to reinvent ourselves, we need to reassess who we are as a team. So I've got a couple of things to talk to you about. But first, let's start with this idea that it's kind of impossible for the team to be the team if we don't have that unit in the middle of the park doing its thing. Now, I'm not trying to absolve defenders from having atrocious performances or being off form. I think we'd all say Virgil is not the same Virgil that we usually like to see, that poor old Joe Gomez had a mare, that Robbo's been off the boil. Trent has been somewhere between poor and mediocre in many aspects of his game for a few games now. This is all very weird. And then we can see the far end of the pitch. Our man, the main man, Mo Salah, has not been himself at all. And it's okay to say that, and it's okay to criticize him. So without absolving the front or the back of the pitch from blame, it's my theory that it doesn't work without the center. Maybe I've got it arseways. What do you think?
So first, you mentioned the stats to start with. I don't think too many of the stats have fallen off a cliff. You know, I think a lot of the stats are very close to what they used to be. They're not quite what they used to be. And I think therein lies the problems as well. They're not falling off a cliff, but they're not quite what they used to be. But that little bit, not quite, is enough, isn't it? And that's what you talk about when you talk about the midfield three. Ginny Wijnaldum, Jordan Henderson and Fabinho did exactly what Klopp wanted them three to do. They were always together, hunted in packs. When we attacked, they supported the play and they allowed our attacker to have a certain amount of freedom in their play. So if they want us to dribble and lose the ball, that would always be our strength. The moment that we lose the ball was the strength of our midfield to win it back. Mm. And then on top of that, the midfield's ability to protect the back four. We've said on this show at least 10 times, I would love to play in Liverpool's back four when the midfield is protecting the way they have been. We haven't got that anymore. We look at our midfield against Napoli. Fabinho is offered. Milner, who is very much coming towards the end of his career. And Harvey Elliott, who doesn't quite get the pressing as of yet, as a very young player, isn't it? So instantly, you've got a massive problem. You stick Henderson, Wijnaldum and Fabinho in there, you got a chance. So I think, as much as everybody talks about our midfield and our real lack of Kevin De Bruyne-type midfield players, that might not be the solution either. The solution, I think, lies nearer to Wijnaldum, Henderson and Fabinho. A trio like that, who are mainly available, don't go looking for headlines, do their jobs in the name of the team, you know. I think that's where our biggest problem is.
I love that. I think you're so right. I think we noticed badly the absence of Wijnaldum last season. And that sounds mad when you consider the season we had. But I've said to you before, I fully believe one of those big ones is over the line with Ginny and the team. And when you factor in the fact that the captain's form was in decline over that season, and that it hasn't been great this season, and that now he's unavailable as well. So that's another factor. And like you say, that's two thirds of that unit, which really was the foundation for this team in so many ways. And it hasn't been replaced, and we've tried to replace it with exciting talent in the form of Harvey Elliott and the likes of Carvalho coming in. We saw how against Everton, that was just a jump too far to have the two lads with Fabinho. And I do feel sorry for Fabinho in this situation. I've seen an awful lot of people digging him out, Jan, and he's been left with a lot to do. In the midfields he's been a part of, especially in the last couple of games. And I looked last night, and we might as well just go there now, at Jimmy Milner. And I am a massive fan of his because I admire the man immensely. I admire anyone who can do what they're doing to a high level with the intensity that he has. And I wondered last night as I watched, and I kind of had that thought a few times over the season to date, I wondered if he's after having his Gary Neville moment, the one that Neville talks about when he's doing his punditry, where he comes in at half time or at full time and he just knows, that's it, I'm done. Not because I can't run around better than probably 70-80% of these younger kids, not because I lack strength or the ability to endure, but because the subtle thing of when people say your legs have gone, Jan, they don't mean you can't run anymore. They mean the sharpness has gone. That's how I interpret what pros mean when they say that. Does that make sense to you? And do you think we might have reached that point with Jimmy Milner? And I mean, I think we might have had this chat before and he's kept plugging away. So where do you feel he's at?
As a starter. I think we've reached that level with him.
Yeah.
You know, as a stopgap solution, second half of games, wanting to close things out, or if you want to go to a conventional back four and keep your fullbacks, you could take Trent off and play Jamie Milner as a fullback for 15, 20 minutes. But in a game where our strength from the first whistle is our intensity, I think we've reached a level where it's almost okay to say that his legs are gone in terms of that. I don't think he's capable of that. You look back at the Napoli game, take the penalty away. But that first tackle, that first brutal tackle, isn't it? Where he wants to get himself into the game. And that's another frustration you have, Trev, isn't it? You want to get yourself into the game. Now, footballers have many different ways of getting into the game, but depending on what their qualities are. Jimmy Milner's way of getting into a game, he's getting a tackle in, isn't it? He's closing somebody down. He's winning the ball high up on the field, isn't it? That's his way of getting into the game. For somebody different, it might be something else, isn't it? So he's then trying to get into the game that he knows he can play, and he couldn't quite get there. So I think it's a problem. The problem you've always got with Milner is that because he's at the club and you've got to make these decisions before the game, you're light on numbers because of injuries, and you kind of go, I know what Milner's going to give us. But obviously, we don't anymore, you know, and that is a big problem. And you also mentioned something before, Trevor, what Klopp said at the end of the game against Napoli, where he's talking about reinventing ourselves. Is that possible with this group of players, with the age that they've got? Can they reinvent themselves again? I mean, I think they've had to do a lot of reinventing to recover from finishing second to City or winning or whatever. Can they do it again? I'm not so sure.
It is a big ask, and it becomes a bigger ask when you do something like exclude a player who does divide fans from a Champions League squad. And I found this fascinating because when Naby Keita was excluded from the Champions League squad, I automatically assumed, despite the fact that the manager was even more vague than he usually is, which is saying something, because Jurgen, I think it's a trait that not many people perhaps understand about Jurgen, but he's capable of bullshitting the media as well as anyone, and he will not tell the press anything he does not want them to know. So when people have been asking questions about Naby Keita's injury, and this always surprises me, he's been really vague and passed it off. I think of myself in that situation, and I think, well, where's your follow-up question when he says it's a muscle? Where's the question that says, All right, Jurgen, we get it, but tell us what you know. What's how long is the guy going to be out for? I mean, fans are interested, and this is why we're here, to talk about the game and your squad. But that question never really comes. And again, I wonder, is that a part of this bigger 7-year atmosphere that grows? Because Jurgen's larger than life, and you don't question him. And obviously, an awful lot of people are worried about maintaining a certain level of access to those press conferences. I get it. I do get it. But obviously, those questions are not being asked about players' fitness in general. But with Keita, we then learn midway through, I'm doing post-match Raw. We're trying to get it off our chests about how we feel and what we saw during the 90 minutes at Napoli. And people are posting photographs, images of the Guinea squad with Naby Keita front and center as a midfielder. Now, perhaps that's just another layer of confusion and he's not going to join them. I don't know, but other people are saying he's already part of the squad. Who knows? Yeah, I don't know what's going on there. I find it all very weird. And when you say, are we capable of reinventing ourselves? Well, in that competition, we're kind of limited now. That seems to be the case. We brought on the kid who we signed only because the captain was crocked, this Arthur Mello kid. I was really worried by a few of the things that I saw from him. He didn't look like he was at home at all. He didn't look excited to be making that debut. I understand the conditions. I really do. I really do. I felt for him. But I wanted to see something a bit different than what I was seeing. So in the Champions League, I don't see how we reinvent ourselves at all in that department. I'm curious to get your take on the Naby Keita thing. And it's way too early to judge a player like Mello on the small sample size that we saw of him when he came on. But it would be interesting to see what you thought of it. So what do you on those two things, the Keita thing and the new boy, what do you reckon?
Yeah, I really don't know with the Naby Keita thing. If he goes away, I'd find it unbelievable if he played. I also find it unbelievable that national managers don't consult with, they don't have to speak to Jurgen Klopp, do they? They just drop an email into the medical staff at Anfield and they go, before we announce our squad, any news? Now, surely the news with him being left out would be that he's out for the foreseeable future. It can't be any other way. And I agree with the press conferences. There is sort of a thing, isn't there, where you ask a question and that question gets answered. And that means that question is then out of bounds, isn't it? You know, it's as if, you know, he's answered it. Let's not go there again. So I do find that. The problem with Arthur is that we really needed somebody who's ready to play. That was the whole thing, wasn't it? Because when we return from international duty, then Jordan Henderson will be back fit. Maybe we'll shoot one or two of the others. So we really need Arthur to come in and be able to play, which he isn't. You know, whether we can get him up to speed on the training ground and with a couple of under 23 games or whatever, I don't know. It was not a great beginning for him, but I can guarantee you, Trevor, as a player, and if you haven't played for a while, and a game like that against Napoli, he's been sitting on the bench and going, I don't need the manager now to introduce me. You know, the club is thinking, give him 20 minutes, get used to it, isn't it? The player's probably thinking, not tonight, please, not tonight.
Right.
But out he went, didn't he? And, you know, caught a couple of times in possession, isn't it? Looked way off pace wise. And we did think that when we signed him, that would be the big thing for him, would be the sheer pace that we play at. And we're not even anywhere near the pace we're capable of playing at. So I think this boy's going to struggle. It's going to take a lot of work.
Whatever we can do in the Premier League, of course, is a different story. And I have this theory that I think of how I think the next few games are going to unfold. And unless I'm mistaken, I just want to double check here because I don't want to be saying things then be wrong. But we have Wolves. It's a typical 3 o'clock Saturday kickoff. It's Anfield. Then we have Ajax at Anfield. Then we go away to Chelsea, big game at their place. And then we have Brighton at Anfield. And, you know, Rangers at Anfield. And we go away to Arsenal then. These are all either high-profile matches or matches in which we have the home advantage and the crowd and all that brings with it. So here's what I'm going to suggest to you that might happen. And I don't know, part of me would rather, if it has to get worse before it gets better, I'd rather it would just get worse now. I'd rather the wheels would come right the hell off. I feel Thiago will step back in beside Fab. And then all of a sudden, Harvey Elliott will be free to play Harvey Elliott's game. Or we'll have one of the other lads in there as an eight, and it will function. I feel that Thiago back in the squad, and perhaps a tweak that they're going to make now, because I think even amateur pundits are wondering what in the name of God is going on with Mo Salah. Why is he marooned where he's marooned and not involved in the play, considering he was one of the players who would have most touches on the Liverpool team? I think you tweak those couple of things. Thiago returns, his importance is immense. That frees up our other midfielder to be able to be attacking. And it was really notable, Thiago getting stuck in. That side of his game, people don't understand. And then perhaps a little tweak in what Mo does. And I think that papers over some cracks for a while, Jan. And I think we get through these games on reputation, adrenaline, just professionalism on the part of individuals. And we get no closer to solving the problem. Do you know where I'm going with this? And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe the only problem is to start winning a few games, and then I need to shut up, and people like me need to shut up. I don't know. What do you think about that?
Well, I think Wolves is always a difficult game. There's never many goals in any of their games, which always makes it tricky. You know, they win 1-0, they lose 1-0, or they draw 0-0. So that always makes it difficult, because it's difficult to get rid of them. It's difficult to run over lead. You're winning 2 or 3-0, you're going to be comfortable. So I think it's going to be a really tricky game. And after you, of course, you've got Ajax, a new team, a young team, fearless, playing good football. Now, the one thing that Ajax will do when it comes down, if you want to play, and they can play through our press. They can play through our press. And that's my big worry with Ajax, is that they can play through our press, and they've got pace up front, and they're obviously full of confidence. They've had a great start to the season, great win against Rangers. And then, of course, Chelsea. I mean, that place is going to be bouncing, isn't it? New manager, here we go. Can still rescue the season. So that's going to be a difficult game. Two things on Mo Salah and his role. Harvey Elliott has been playing on the right instead of Jordan Henderson. Now, I think Jordan Henderson was really good at trying to help Trent and Mo and the way they wanted to play. So Henderson tried to make space. He had a tendency to overlap Mo Salah. Harvey Elliott, left-footed, underlaps. So he takes up the space where Mo wants to play. But so does Trent, I think. We don't see Trent overlapping either. We don't see Trent getting to the byline more and putting in crosses. He appears on the edge of the 18-yard box in that right-hand corner where Mo plays. So I think Mo is like looking and thinking, that space that was always left, Jordan created that space. Firmino created that space by never going into that space unless Mo needed him. That space he was all relying on because he's so quick is no longer there, you know. And of course, Harvey Elliott being left-footed as well, playing on the right. Well, you know what way he wants to go, isn't he? He wants to go away from Mo and across. So I think all of those things, when we analyse it, these are not the reasons. I don't have the exact reasons. But these are things that you look at and you're thinking, well, it's affecting something, isn't it? It's not the sole reason, is it? But another thing that's worth keeping an eye on.
Yeah, in that, it's absolutely not the sole reason that Mo Salah is underperforming, that he's being asked to do something different tactically. A thing that Pep Linders spoke about, it was put to Klopp, and Klopp's sort of, this is where I'm talking about him bullshitting the media, he sort of scowled and said, it's no different than any other years. But it is, and we can all see that. So there is definitely something there he's been asked to do. But that in and of itself doesn't explain why most of the time he gets the ball, he's been ineffective. That's a worry. That is a worry. And a lot of people will trace that drop off in form to all the way back to when he went off to the AFCON, and lots of people were hanging on. I thought a little bit desperately in the way that some people do to certain numbers and saying, yeah, but, and I was going, yeah, but his form is not what, he's not scoring the amount of goals he needs to score. If we're going to win these trophies, he has to be his very best. It wasn't happening. And people were trying to defend the player and say, but he's doing this and he's doing that, and look at this number and that number. But effectiveness, sharp end effectiveness, is what we judge someone like Mo Salah on. So yeah, it's a complicated scenario. And, you know, I guess before we even go on, there's another thing that raises its head there, and I'd forgotten about it. Thanks to Guy for flagging it there in the chat. How would you feel about the distinct possibility, because it is a distinct possibility, that if the British Queen passes, you're looking at a weekend where the Reds don't play. And is that a thing that the team actually needs? Or is that a thing that we desperately don't need? Because I've heard you say before, after a bad game, the best thing to do is play the next game. What do you reckon?
Yeah, it's a tricky one, man. I don't know what the plans of the government and the royal family is with Queen Elizabeth II passing away, which is obviously sad in itself. So I don't know where that goes. In terms of, you talk about people trying to protect Mo, or it's like what I said before about the stats, isn't it? You know, the stats are not massively down, but what we see with our own eyes doesn't look right, does it? So it's a bit like finding the body on the beach, isn't it? And somebody goes over and says, like, it was absolutely perfect. The only thing missing was his head. You know, it's a bit like, but it's a bit like that, Trevor, isn't it? You know, it's kind of, yeah, most stats okay, isn't it? Anything missing? Well, yeah, the goals are missing, you know, and that's a problem, isn't it?
Yeah.
But the only thing I will say is that Mo went away to the AFCON, played in a terrible team that played terrible football, yeah? So that in itself wouldn't have got him excited. He then comes back to almost like a new Anfield, doesn't he? Luis Diaz has arrived. So Sadio Mane's new position. You know, so Luis Diaz on the left and Sadio Mane's in the middle and Mo's playing on the right. So that was almost like a whole new experience for him to come back and go, what's happened here? Mm. You know, so and then of course he has the disappointment of not winning the AFCON. Then he has the disappointment immediately after not qualifying for the World Cup or whatever. So I don't know. Are we trying to make excuses? Probably somewhere lines. I think we're more trying to try and find reasons, isn't it? You know, I think the more reasons you can sort of find that possibly goes against Mo, the easier it might be to still try and protect the body without a head, you know?
Yeah, the body without a head is a fantastic analogy, because I have felt like I was in crazy town trying to explain to people who were citing yards run, tackles made, assists or semi-assists or hockey assists or whatever the hell they're calling them now. And I was going, yeah, but like you just said, yeah, but goals. And Mo Salah is goals. He's a lot of things, but he's goals, and we need that. Look, there's not much that can be solved in terms of squad tweaking at this point, because it's about hopefully some people returning from injury. Curtis Jones notably absent from the squad again after seeing as if he was on the way back. I'm not sure what's happening there. Maybe there's a simple explanation for that. I don't know. Maybe there isn't. But like I say, there's not much that can be done. So we're back to one last question on this. And, you know, it's a big topic. So I don't apologize to anybody for apparently flogging a dead horse. But it comes back to what can be done to arrest the slide. Now, I think if it was in the past and the contrast wasn't quite so striking between what we saw against Napoli, for example, what we saw against Everton, what we saw on the opening day of the season, and our best performances, if that drop-off wasn't there, I think what you'd be saying is, well, you make sure that Ali and the lads at the back are communicating clearly, and that their first priority of the entire team is to protect them and do everything you can do to protect them. And we go from that base. But we're just not wired like that. You know, we're not wired like that. And people were pointing out to Jurgen that the high line is a bit of a liability. And I was so happy, Jan, last year and the year before, being able to laugh at people like that who are trying to be football experts. And say, oh, after we concede that goal, oh, it's the high line, you know. No, it wasn't. The high line is the reason that we have caught twice as many people offside and we've had twice as many goals ruled out, because we do it right. But we're not even doing that right. And again, Jurgen's holding up his hands, mea culpa, saying, well, if you don't have the press right, if we're not pressurizing the ball, I guess the high line is a liability. And I'm back to the question of identity, Jan, and it feels like it's such a big fix now. It doesn't feel like it's tweaks. It feels like it's something that needs to go from grassroots, from basics, from first principles. And I personally would dread the thought of having to be the one in the Klopp chair making those decisions. I don't know where you even begin. Am I, as a fan here, typical fan, over elaborating? Am I catastrophizing? Is it actually a lot simpler than that?
I don't think it is. And I think the biggest problem is identity. You know, I think before you play a game of football as a manager, what you pick is how you want to play tactically. That's the first thing you do, isn't it? Now, we've never had a problem deciding how we want to play tactically because more or less we play the same way every game. You know, this is how we play. You know how we play. And we go out and play. There'll be minor tweaks from game to game, but generally it's the same thing, isn't it? And then you pick your team based on that, who can play in the way that I want to play. But our identity is the high press and the high line, yeah? Two things we can't get right at the moment, which then means you go back to how do we want to play? Do we actually just want to play with a straightforward back four without attacking fullbacks and try and protect ourselves and give ourselves a chance? Then you come away from your identity, and I don't think that's as easy as it is. So I think there's so many things you have to look at. You look at the way the tactic we want to play the game, you look at the starting lineup, and I think almost everything comes into play when you look at the starting lineup. Trent comes into play. Robbo comes into play. I saw a stat today about Virgil van Dijk. 150 games across all competitions without giving away a penalty. And he's given away two in the last seven games. I'm not saying, but it's another thing, isn't it? And then you look at the midfield. And how do you want to put the midfield together? Do you want to put the midfield together as a midfield that can create and keep possession? Or do you want to keep a midfield together in line with our identity, which is intensity and press? And then you look at the front three and go, we talk about Darwin Núñez, and I was amazed last night. People talk about Darwin Núñez needs a bit of time to get used to your teammates. And I thought, well, play him then. You know, if he needs time to get to know his new teammates, stick him in. You know, and also you must have known that Napoli would have a lot of possession and they're quite a good team. So there would be possibilities on the break for exactly what he brings, isn't it? So I just think all of a sudden there's so many things, as well as looking at individual players, you look at how you want the back four to operate, how you want the midfield three to operate, and what do you want from the front three. You know, is it where we change the game, like we did when John Aldridge came to the game? Sorry, Janfield. Before John Aldridge came to the Janfield, we used to play through the middle. In through Kenny, into Rushy running behind. Rushy went, Aldo came, we spread the play. We went over the flanks, we put crosses in. So what I'm saying is that with Darwin Núñez, who we now have to persist with, don't we? You know, he's the guy, isn't he? Stick him in. What do we then do? How do we want to use him? Do we want to use him going through the middle? Do we want to come over the flanks? How do we want to do all these things? It's a lot to work out between having played Wednesday and having to play Saturday, isn't it? But I do generally think that, whereas normally, Trevor, and we've been very blasé on this show, isn't it? Don't worry about it. 2 days on the training ground, we know it's going to be right, isn't it? So there's a lot of decisions to make for Jurgen Klopp.
And it's not just the attacking ones, Jan. Just real quickly, have you noticed that now corners for us have become a liability for us? Yeah. I mean, that in and of itself is a horrendous situation that talks about a fraying of whatever sort of basic fabric is making up the team. And whatever those little connective tissues are, they're all awry. I'd love to say to you, it's something as simple. I'd love to be able to say, well, it's just Virgil's not himself, so therefore the back line is not itself, so therefore the rest of the team. But as you've already sort of shown and we've been discussing, it's so much more complex than that. And yeah, I get the feeling it's going to be a slow turnaround if it is a turnaround. There's one last thing on this topic that I want to address with you, because a lot of people are talking about it. And some people are talking about it in a way that's kind of, it's childish. And they're talking about the Pep Linders book, which came out and had a lot of fanfare and a lot of discussion about it, because the gist of the book is that it's called intensity because that, again, is our identity. There was a lot of talk. Every presser that Pep did for this book was all about the team's identity as pressing and all the rest. And of course, then an awful lot of people think, well, that's come back to bite you on the arse. And people are scrounging around for things to give out about. We were giving out about it on the show last night, not because all of a sudden the book is some magic thing that's done us down, because that's childish, but because isn't it ironic that just at the point where that has come out and we're celebrating the fact that our identity is intensity, we've rarely seen a less intense Liverpool team. Now, I put this to a pal of mine this morning, and he was dead set against me. He said, no, most of the things are still right. Most of the things are still there. I can't see that. I cannot see that. And the stats do back up that it's not the way it used to be. Any take on that? I mean, you know yourself, books can come out. They can always cause a bit of a kerfuffle. Usually it's because a lad has said something in a book about another lad. Here it's because it's got the fans talking about, well, if this is our identity, well, why aren't we going out to spend money on young attacking midfielders that can come in and replace the guys that have left? And, they're shouting. You understand where they're going with it. What do you make about all of that? It's a bit of a distraction, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, yeah. So I have the book. I haven't read it. Have you read it, Trevor?
Yeah, I did. And it's a very enjoyable read. And he's a very...
So what is it? It's about last season, isn't it?
Basically. Yeah, and the bigger idea behind the philosophy at Liverpool. And look, he's a very amiable guy. He's very good at what he does. So it's not to pick on him at all. It's just, isn't it an unfortunate backdrop that as we seem to be celebrating this aspect of ourselves, that's the time when it seems to fall on its arse.
I have to be honest. When the book came out, and as you rightly said, there was a lot of publicity, and I did think, my first thought was, a bit unusual. It is very unusual, isn't it?
Yeah.
If it's the manager, fair enough, but it's very unusual for the assistant to come out with a book. But obviously the foreword was by Jurgen Klopp, so you'd have been quite happy. I don't think for one moment that Napoli bought that book and read that and gone, this is how we're going to beat Liverpool, you know. And it's not simple as that, is it? But it is unusual, and it is possibly a distraction, isn't it? So the only thing I will say is that, but I guess it's kind of the world that we live in, isn't it? You know what I mean? Can we tell a story about our journey, about our football club, without telling the things that we want to keep to ourselves, isn't it? It's such a difficult balance to get right.
Yeah, well, actually, that's an aspect I hadn't even thought about. I was just thinking, isn't it ironic? But yeah, of course, giving teams an insight as to how you operate is a different thing I hadn't even considered. But look, we have to get it right one way or the other. And the first guys out of the block to face the Reds, whether they're licking their wounds or whatever, are Wolves. And Wolves are, you know, as you said, always a tricky opponent. Their last few results, they had a win at home to Southampton in the Premier League on the 3rd of September. Before that, they drew 0-0 with Bournemouth, at Bournemouth, which I'm sure they wouldn't consider a great result. They had a 1-1 draw with Newcastle, which, depending on your opinion of Newcastle, isn't bad. That was at home for Wolves. They had a win in the EFL where they put Preston out. And I think they started the season with a defeat to Tottenham, and then before that, a 0-0 with Fulham. I think that was the first one. Maybe there was a game at Leeds before that where they lost as well. They're not on great form, Jan. This is not the Wolves that would make you as nervous as previous iterations of it would have. Let's just have a look at who went out for them in the lineup against Southampton, where they did have that 1-0 win. Well, they had Sa in goals. They had Collins and Kilman at centre-half, Castro and Ait Nouri, at the full-back. Nunes and Neves and Moutinho. You can hear the influence of the agents and the managers that are working with the club there. And across the front line, they had Neto, they had Potence and Kaladzic. And then on the bench, what can they draw from? Well, on the day, they had Gonçalo Guedes, who came on and got a yellow. Nelson Semedo, we've seen before. Adama Traore came on as well. Again, all these names have something in common. They also had Hwang Hee-chan, who I haven't seen, came off the bench, and Matias Sarkic and Toti Gomez. Now, again, I will not profess to know a lot about a lot of the depth on that bench. I obviously have seen a few of them, but not a whole lot of them. I've seen Nelson Semedo before. Obviously, we've seen lots of Traore. Most of those guys in the first team we have seen. And one thing we know that they will do, Jan, and you're right about this, is they will have the capacity to play the football that will challenge us in this current sort of malaise that we're suffering from. They will be able to play through our attempts if our attempts are not good enough to high press. That in and of itself makes them far from ideal opposition. Remember a couple of weeks back you were saying if you could pick a game now after a couple of bad results or frustrating results, the game you would have picked was the one where we went down and won 9-0. Here, this isn't the worst game we could have had, but certainly not one you'd handpick, Jan.
No, because they don't play open games. The games are very tight. I mean, the one thing you instantly see with Wolves is that there's a lack of goals. I mean, they're that desperate that I think they got Diego Costa on a short-term deal because the boy that made his debut last weekend got injured and is out for at least 6 months, so that's very unfortunate. But they let go. But they got a very few clever midfield three. They're a little bit pedestrian, although the new board they've signed for 30-odd million, the Portuguese escapes me now the name, but he looks a decent player. I've got a feeling that the likes of Pedro Neto might play because of his pace, but they are capable of playing through our press because technically they're very, very good. So that's interesting in itself. But as I said before, the games are very tight. The big thing you'll notice is that they've gone away from playing a back three. You know, play a back four just with the two centre-halves. I don't know whether that makes them more vulnerable or not. But no, it's definitely not the game I would have picked because their game's always very, very tight, isn't it? And they're capable of keeping them on for long periods because the technique's so very good. So it's again one of those in the borderline where you go, this game, either way, I just think it could be one of those frustrating games, you know, where you just can't quite get to. You know, you get yourself in front, and you get yourself two goals in front, and you can relax. I don't know whether we'll have the benefit of that.
Yeah, and we'll get to see whether or not my theory about Thiago papering over some cracks will hold water or not. It's going to be interesting one way or the other. And a guy actually just reminded us there that the lad you're trying to think of the name of, Matias Nunes, I think, right? That's the guy who was linked with Liverpool as well. one of the many midfield targets fans were obsessing about. And before we finish, because we won't have time to talk before this, the next game that we have after that, of course, then is the Champions League against Ajax. And Carl Matchett, who was doing the show with me last night, reckons he had watched the Ajax game beforehand. And he reckons, despite the fact that Napoli were excellent against us, the best performance of the night in the Champions League was actually Ajax. He reckoned they played really well in dispatching Rangers 4-0, I think it was, in their group game. And they are flying, of course, at home, as you would expect, in their own league. And they seem to have done it again, Jan, you know, in terms of piecing together yet another squad from that wonderful academy that they have, and that, you know, ability to recruit lads like yourself when they don't have lads coming from the academy. They seem to always have great young players coming through. And it looks like it's going to be a real challenge for us there again. Again, these are going to be a team who, far more than Wolves, will be capable of playing that type of football that you just described and a bit more. And it won't suit us in our current form. And we are going to have to really step up. And this is what I kind of meant when I said to you, things might have to get a lot worse before they get better. Everybody wants to think, Jan, that that was the biggest. It was embarrassing, wasn't it? It was kind of embarrassing to watch. And that was enough of a humiliation that's the moment where we all click back into gear. Everyone wants to think that. I want to think that. I certainly hope that. But then I look at these couple of fixtures that are coming up immediately and I think, yikes. How do you feel about the challenge that Ajax will pose?
I think it's going to be difficult. And I was going to say, I don't know how they do it, but I do have an idea of how they do it. They sell half the team. They sold more players in the summer than they wanted to. But obviously they found the replacements. Obviously got a new coach in place. Flying star in the Eredivisie, and obviously winning 4-0 in your first Champions League game as a flying star. You can always recognise an Ajax team, even without them playing in the Ajax colours, because of the way they play. And you're right in saying that they'll come to Anfield, they'll want to play, they'll play out from the back, attacking fullbacks, attacking midfield players, a lot of movement and pace and technical ability up front, isn't it? So, yes, in our current state, although we're significantly better than Ajax when we're at our best, we got more physicality, we got more power, we got more pace, isn't it? But the last thing you want is a team that just comes and goes. We don't care if we play home and away. We don't care who we play against. This is how we play every game we play in a season. Because that's the way they play, isn't it? I know that from my own experience. We never change the way we play. So that in itself will make it a bit of a nightmare opposition. Yeah, it's a nightmare opposition to have Ajax, because if they get it right and we can't quite get it right, isn't it? We could be in big trouble.
That's what you fear. And, you know, I think that's actually a really appropriate kind of note to end it on. Not to be negative, but just that's the way the discussion has gone. Now, the most easy part of the show in the past used to be, Jan, give me a share how you think each game is going to go. I say easy. You're usually uncannily accurate with a lot of the predictions. But they've kind of thrown everything out of the pram for us now, and it's an impossible thing almost to predict, because we've gone to a couple of extremes there. You've suggested it could go very badly for us. We're hoping that we'll recover. What's your gut feeling on the two results?
My gut feeling is that we'll win them, and I think there's some positives. The positives are both of them at Anfield. You know, and I think the crowd are realizing the crowd is not about to turn on this team. You know, so I think the crowd at Anfield realizes that, okay, the boys are in a bit of trouble. Let's do everything that we can. The other positive is that we saw some players back in the second half against Napoli. Matip, Thiago, Schotter, Nunez came on. So that in itself is another positive, that we'll have more senior players back. And I've just got a feeling that sometimes as a player, you go, we can't do what we like to do, but we'll still find a way. And I think that might be the way that these two games are going to go for us. That, okay, we're not playing the way we want to play, but we're going to find a way. So I think we'll beat Wolves 1-0, 2-0. I just can't see them scoring. Ajax, you know, again, it could be a bit, you know, when we welcomed AC Milan last season, the first Champions League back for them, and we beat them 3-2. It wouldn't surprise me if Ajax turns out to be one of those 2-1, 3-2 sort of games. But I've got a feeling that we will just somehow get over the line in both of them.
You know, we've been doing this show a long time, and for most of the time, the Liverpool thing has almost looked after itself. And we spent good chunks of the show talking about other situations with other clubs and what's going on elsewhere in football, as much to give ourselves something to talk about that will change or that is in flux as anything else. And I've always said to you at the end, listen, I really appreciate you going around all those topics. I understand it's a lot, and, you know, I really do appreciate it. But this is a different type of show, isn't it? Because we have to focus on what's going on with Liverpool. And it's every bit as difficult, and it requires every bit as much deep thought from yourself. So again, for yet another show, Jan, genuinely appreciate it. Thanks very much.
Well, it's kind of going back to basic, isn't it? Because this right now is where the problem is, isn't it? You know, we haven't got energy to talk about other clubs and their troubles or how well they're playing. This is about us, isn't it? Because we got one or two issues that we need to sort ASAP.
That's it. There's only one show in town, and that is Liverpool, and hopefully Liverpool's improvement. The other show in town, of course, is Malby on Spot, and we'll be back with you next week. We'll have played Ajax at that stage, and we'll also have played Wolves at that stage, and I hope that we have a slightly chirpier demeanour in terms of our mood, because the Reds have lifted it. Let's hope that is the case. We look forward to speaking to you then. From Jan Malby and myself, goodbye.
We hope you enjoyed listening to this Anfield Index show. Please be sure to subscribe to our channel so future podcasts find their way to your device automatically. There's nothing quite like fan engagement, and we'd love to know what you think of anything discussed on this show. The best way to get in touch is over on our free Discord community, where both podcasters and listeners debate the hottest LFC topics 24/7. Sign up free now at anfieldindex.com/Discord. You won't regret it. You can also follow us on Twitter at Anfield Index and find us on Facebook by searching for Anfield Index. Oh, and before you go, we'd love it if you could leave us a 5-star review on your favourite podcast app. It only takes a couple of seconds, and it means the world to the people who create these free shows. Sports Social Podcast Network.